And my husband Matt's like, you know what? The Hawk 50 mile that's up in Kansas, he's like, you need to sign up for that. So when you're done with your shower and you're done with your little pity party, you need to come out here and sign up for that, because I'm not letting you give up because you've worked so hard.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. Whenever trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where our conversations might go. So there aren't too many topics that are off limits for us. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hello, good evening. This is Trail Talk, the Ultramarathon Mindset, where we talk about putting your mind and your body in sync for maximum performance and ultimate health. And talking today, my guest tonight is Misty Wright. She is a friend of mine. In fact, Misty, I think you are one of the first runners that I really got acquainted with. You and Dan Savage was a mutual friend of ours. He was the one who inspired me to become a trail runner. And so once I started running trails, I ran into him and very quickly started running with you back in about 2018. So welcome. What I'd like to do is just, since most people don't know much about you, just kind of say who you are and kind of a little bit about yourself and whatever you tell new people whenever you see them.
My name is Misty. That's it. Misty Wright. Originally, I was born and raised in Michigan. We moved to Kansas City area in 2016 from work for my husband. I actually work in printing, interesting as that is. So it's a very, not quite the career I thought I would take, but yeah, you know, I've started when I was younger. I did a lot of running in high school with cross country and track. So, you know, that's kind of why I like to run and kind of what got me into it in the first place. But yeah, so okay. We've been here back here 9 months now. So moved back to Michigan and came back. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember we were all sad when you left, when you left Kansas City, and we were all very grateful when you came back. It's been really enjoy having you part of running community here. What we do here, and I'll say to the people who are listening, I've got somebody's listening live now. I'm using a new system. So can you see the comments coming in on your screen as well?
No, I can't.
You can't see the comments. Okay. Mm-mm. It may be a setting that I have to do. So, okay. I just wanted to double check. So, Caitlin, and I'm going to,
Tripkowski. That's how I say it. Yeah. Hi, Caitlin. Yeah.
Caitlin says hi. So, any of you who are watching this live, if you have a comment or a question that you would like to, I will monitor those as well, and may ask the question, make it part of our conversation. The idea here is we call this show Trail Talk. And it is designed to be just a conversation with as if two trail runners went out onto a trail and started a conversation. And so I got to know you, Misty, through Trail Talk. I mean, we were out running trails together, and and maybe I should ask you this. Did you slow down so that I could keep up with you, or did you, or was that your normal speed?
I'm never telling on that one.
What's that?
I'm not telling because nobody needs to know that. The pace is the pace, right? It doesn't matter if it's slow or fast. So
the pace is the pace. Yeah. I know that there are a lot of runners, especially when you get into groups that they tend to spread out. And I knew the trails well enough, so I didn't feel left out. So I knew where I was going, but I always appreciated running with you and being able to talk. So anyway, kind of where I wanted to start is if you could kind of give us a short or as long as you want, how you got started as a runner.
So yeah, like I said, I used to run in high school, but then, you know, there's a big gap as an adult. You know, I had kids and family and life kind of got in the way, and my weight had kind of crept up quite severely after that. I was almost 240 pounds. And I made a bet with a couple of friends at work to see who could lose the most weight, you know, and it was me, a girl against two guys. So I was like, there's no way I'm going to lose this, right? And not that I'm competitive or anything, but yeah, there was no way I was going to let those two beat me because I sat next to them. So I wouldn't hear the end of it if that was something I lost. So we made a bet to see who could lose the most weight, and running was, you know, what was kind of my go-to. So I started because I was really uncomfortable in my skin having that kind of weight. So I was running loops around my yard at first
How big was your yard?
It was less than 3 acres. So it was, it wasn't a lot, you know, maybe a quarter of a mile loop altogether.
Okay.
But, so that's where I started. And then, you know, I kept at it. And, I think it was February, and I knew I was going to beat those guys just from running. So I'd lost 40 pounds and we were going to all three of us run a race in March in Bay City, Michigan, where I'm from, the St. Patrick's Day race. And so, when it came time for the final weigh-in, I think I'd lost like 45 pounds and I went to run that race. And I remember showing up there feeling like, yeah, I had lost weight, but boy, did I not fit in with that running crowd there. So it was, you talk about pace. It was like, okay, I'm not fast. I'm not skinny. Mm-hmm. I don't have that physique that you have in your head that a runner should have. So, I went out.
Did you feel like you just didn't fit? What am I doing here?
Yeah. What am I doing here? This is because people say to you, like, why are you running somewhere where you can, or paying to run somewhere we can run any day, you know, but it's for the energy that you get, you know, and right. I got inside the corral and you have to understand this is a large race, like thousands of people, you know.
Okay. So it wasn't just like a few hundred people.
No, not like a trail race.
Okay.
No, there's quite a few people who run it. And so I went out and run walk and I finished it. And I was so, so proud of myself that I was like, okay, I can do this, you know? And then you see all of the different body types and people out there. And it just made me realize that, you know what, I do fit in here and it's okay to show up. And so encourage people to take a risk and, you know, where you don't seem like you fit in, just to go and do it, because sometimes it's a very pivotal moment in your life when you do that. And that's what that race was in a lot of ways. So yeah, from there I did a lot more 5Ks. And actually it was in August of that same year, I ran my first trail race.
Okay.
And that was the Taqua. It was the Taqua 10K, I think it was at that point. So it's Tequamanon Falls, Michigan, is the upper peninsula. So it took me an hour and a half to go the 6 miles, but that was that right there. That's when I knew trail running was what I really enjoyed.
So what was it that actually drew you to trail racing? I mean, trail running. I mean, a lot of times people, if they start on road, they kind of stay with that and don't ever go into. So did you have somebody who like said, hey, why don't you try trail running? Or
No, I've always been kind of outdoorsy. Like I said, I ran cross country in high school, but the thing that really stuck with me and still does from the standpoint of the trail running community was running along and watching someone in front of me trip and fall and hurt themselves and seeing people stop, help them up, make sure they were okay, and walk with them a little bit. And it happened right with me. So right in front of me to watch that happen. And it was like, you know what? These are my kind of people who think about the people around them, who, you know, help the people around them. And it's not just about the time and the pace. It's about the community part of it. And that from that point on, yeah, that's what really made me stick with it. So,
Well, cool. So first trail race was 10K. So did you go back to road for a while, or did you just keep going with trails?
Oh man, I've done so many races between that, but I mean, because where we were at, there weren't a lot of trails available. So there was a lot of road running involved. So I did a lot of those kinds of races, but I did go back and run that race every year because I enjoyed it and jumped up to the 25K distance, which is point to point. And it's a gorgeous, gorgeous race. If anyone gets a chance to run it, I recommend it.
Sounds like a fun race. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of elevation, or was it fairly flat?
For up there, a lot of elevation, but it's beautiful because you're going through like old hardwood growths, from forests. You're running along the river, you run along the waterfalls, which this is my Michigan facts coming out. It's the second largest waterfall east of the Mississippi. So Niagara being the first.
Okay. Wow. That's, so then you, did you start running then farther distances? Or how did you make the how did you make the transition into ultra running? Cause when I met you, you were running like, I mean, 10K was a warm-up run for you. I mean, well, not quite.
5 miles is a warm-up run.
Miles is a warm-up run. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I got into ultras kind of later. So 2014, I've run one marathon and it's kind of a joke. So I've run one marathon. It was in 2012. I wanted to do that distance and see what it was like. Mm-hmm. And it was in Michigan. It was a new race called the Qualifier. And it hit, you know, Michigan in the spring, you're thinking 60 degrees, perfect temperature. We talked about this, right? Perfect temperature for running. Yeah, no, not for my marathon. It was 95 degrees on fresh asphalt with no shade. And I hated every minute of it and have never run another marathon. So I'm like, that's it. So people look at me, they're like, you've gone, you know, ultra distances, but you've only run one marathon. Yep. I have only run one marathon, because it was awful.
I only ran one marathon, and that was when I was, my dad was talking to me about it. I was 26 years old, and it was the, you know, running craze back in the, you know, how old was it? Would have been the late 70s, you know, when Forrest Gump's that whole thing. I ran and finished and then quit. And so, but yeah, so one marathon is all I've ever done too. So,
I went from there and went, you know, that half marathon, 25K distance, that's perfect. That's a perfect distance, you know? So that was 2012. So I really did kind of stick with half marathons, like trail half marathons and such after that. So, but then in 2013, you know, reading the Trail Runner magazines and seeing these beautiful photos of great places to run. One of the things I started reading about was the rim to rim to rim for the Grand Canyon. So, and I have this crazy friend named Jim who I have, who I graduated from high school with, and he's kind of the one who's talked me into the ultra distance because of that. So in June of that year, 2013, he asked me, he's like, hey, I'm thinking of doing this rim to rim to rim for the Grand Canyon. And I'm like, oh, that's fantastic. I don't think I could ever do anything like that. Cause he runs twice as fast as me. If I run a mile in 12 minutes, he's going to do it in six, you know, he's fast. And so, we talked about it and he's like, yeah, I'm like, well, keep me posted on this adventure because I would love to hear about it and see all about, you know, when you do this and that would be an awesome thing. So it's like, okay. And, we were both headed up to, again, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan into the Porcupine Mountains to run. He was running a trail marathon and I was running the half marathon. So we were both up there. Mm-hmm. And, so we sat down the night before the race and had a dinner and drinks and we were chatting about this Grand Canyon adventure. He's like, you know, I still haven't found anyone to do this with me. And I was like, oh no.
That's usually what happens. You sit down over drinks and your friends talk you into it.
Yeah, you're like, and you're thinking, oh man. So I'm like, you haven't, huh? He's like, nope. And he knew he was planting a seed, right? Mm-hmm. So the next day, you know, we go out, he runs the marathon, I run the half marathon, and I'm driving back home with friends of mine who had gone up there with me. And I'm thinking about it and I'm like, you know what? I could do at least some of it. You know, maybe I can't do the whole 42, 45 mile distance, but you know, I could do some of it. So I sent him a text message and I'm like, hey, you know, if you can help me train for this, then I will try and talk Matt, my husband, into allowing me to do this little adventure with you. And so he's like, all right, you know, all right. Yep. Absolutely. We will train together. And so that was, like I said, October of 2013. Okay. So my husband reluctantly went along with it. So it's like, okay. So, and he ended up going with us. So we planned to do that in March of 2014. So March 30th, 2014, we attempted the rim to rim to rim. He did the whole thing. Technically it's my first ultra distance. I think I did about 28 miles of it. Mm-hmm. So I knew I couldn't safely descend that second time because it's a lot of, you know, you do 5,000 feet of down, yes, and then you go across and then you got to climb, but then you also have to descend again. And it was the descending I was worried about. So mm-hmm. I stopped it a little short, but technically that was my first unofficial ultra.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So, but, I was kind of bummed I didn't do the whole distance. So the same friend talked me into, he's like, it was crazy. So it's 4 weeks later. I couldn't walk right for 2 weeks after doing mm-hmm, that mm-hmm, because my legs yeah. hurt so bad. And he's like, hey, you know, there's this 50K down in Pinckney, Michigan. Do you want to go run that 50K with me? And I was like, do you think I could do it? He's like, yeah, this is on a Tuesday. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, the race was on Sunday. So it's like 5 days later. So oh, wow. I completed that in actually the less time than I did my first marathon. So wow. all trail.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
That was my first 50K, the Pinckney 50K in Michigan.
Okay.
So.
That's cool. So now the marathon was on road, mm-hmm. right? Okay, but yep. you did the trail 50K faster.
Yep.
Wow, that's not usually what happens.
No, no. So, but yep. yeah.
So
that's how that started.
That's cool. So so then where did you go from there? Did you just kind of stay at the 50K distance?
Okay, so you know how that happens, right? So you uh-huh. do a 50K, and the next thing you're thinking of, you're like, you know, if mm-hmm. I did 50K, could I do 50 miles, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so you kind of toss that around in the back of your head. I did a couple more 50Ks after that, and then I think it was 2015, so not, what, a year and a half later, I was like, maybe I could try for 50 miles, you know? So maybe that's something I could try. So I registered for the Ice Age 50 mile in Wisconsin. Okay. That was my first registration for a 50 mile. And uh-huh. so going into 2016 would have been in May of 2016 would have been when I would have run that. So if anyone knows, if you put my timeline together, we moved down to Kansas City in May of 2016.
Okay.
So, yeah. So there was a lot of stress involved with that race and trying to fit in all of the training while trying to pack up and sell a house and move 800 miles away. Mm-hmm. So, I did get 25 miles into that and then I didn't finish it. The thing with that race is that the cutoff is 12 hours for 50 miles.
Oh my goodness. That's quite a
aggressive,
severe cutoff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
is it like the course flat or something?
No,
I
mean, oh no.
So,
no, it's not.
Okay.
So that was my first attempt at the 50 mile. And so of course I didn't make it, but you know, there's a lot going into it, like with stress and training timeframes and, mm-hmm. and not having necessarily the right amount of time to put into it. So I went back, you know, living here, happy to have more trails and hillier trails to train on. I thought I'd have a better shot going into it. So I decided to try it again in 2017. Mm-hmm. So I did get a coach to work with. Colleen is who I worked with on that to work towards the 2017 50 mile for Ice Age. And again, 12 hour cutoff, right? So
yeah,
now I've learned some things from this mm-hmm. whole, but we'll get to that, right? So, so, you know, I worked really hard and I did a lot of the training and especially at like Wyandotte County, Waco here with those trails is what I used because those are hard trails. And I felt like I had done really well with my training going into Ice Age. Mm-hmm. I was tired a lot towards the end. I was really worn out. I was, you know, probably not necessarily taking care of myself the best that I could because I was pushing so hard because I had this goal and I knew I needed to make it. So, Dan actually went with me to that one. I don't know if you remember if you knew him then or not, but
well, I knew
that one.
I wasn't a runner then. In 2017, I was a mountain biker and I, mm-hmm. and Dan was going for his first, well, I don't know if his first 50 mile. He was trying for a 50 mile and he went through and one of them was rained out. One of them was so hot. He could, you know, he just couldn't make it, which I mean, I know running in the heat
doesn't that to you.
That old coach, he ran that one with you.
Yeah. So the heat one was,
okay.
So fast forward to reminiscent of my marathon fun times, 2017, we go up, Dan and I and Matt and Dan's wife, Christine, go up to Wisconsin to run the Ice Age 50 mile. Mm-hmm. And, so it ended up being an unseasonably hot day up there. No shade because the leaves hadn't popped out of the trees up there yet. It was early May. I think it was 85 85 degrees. So it's pretty warm to go into. And I started having problems with the heat. So like heat stroke symptoms. So I'd have the chills. I was sweating profusely. I was not okay. So and that was at mile 20 for the 50 mile. So I had to drop at that point because it was heat stroke symptoms. Mm-hmm. So from that point, we took it to, okay, we're going to support Dan to see if we can get Dan through to his 50 mile. And he made it farther, but it had the same problems where the heat just took him out.
With the cutoff of 12 hours, I mean, you would tend to overheat because you'd have to run hard.
You have to run hard. So yeah, that was the learning experience from there. Was like, you know what, maybe a 12 hour cutoff, you know, is probably not the best. But so Dan, we go back to the hotel after this one, and I was just in tears and just like, I'm done. I'm not going to try any more of these distances. This is not something I should be doing. Mm-hmm. And even my husband was like, this is not you. Normally you dust yourself off and you're like, all right, let's do this again. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I was talking to my coach at the time and letting her know what was going on. And all of them were like, okay, this does not sound like you. So, you know, I'm in there, and Matt and my husband, Matt's like, you know what, the Hawk 50 mile that's up in Kansas. He's like, you need to sign up for that. So when you're done with your shower and you're done with your little pity party, you need to come out here and sign up for that, because I'm not letting you give up because you've worked so hard. So he really was kind of the kick that said, you need to, you know, he kind of helped me through that. Yeah. He pushed me and said, you're going to do this. So I did come back and talk to my coach in that. And we, you know, that one has what, what is it? 24, 30 hours?
32.
Yeah. So 32 hours. I'm like, there's no pressure there to hit that 12 hour cutoff, which, you know, from the standpoint of an ultra, you know, the mental part of it is huge. So when you're constantly thinking you're behind cutoffs, you know, that can take you out of a race. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize that until you've run a couple and you've run into that situation where you're like, your mind's turning over your cutoffs and you're just like, I'm not going to make it, you know? So it's already hard enough. You have to figure your way through that part of it too. Mm-hmm. That's that mental piece that exists. So yeah, I went and I did register for that. And then 3 weeks later, I went up back to Michigan to run the Mutt trail race, which is a fantastic format. I'm sad that I ran the last one last year. They're not doing it that format for a while, but it's a team race where you have four runners, and one does, I think it's a 5 mile, 10 mile, 20 mile, and a 50K distance. So you have four runners and you have to start the race together. And at the halfway points for each of those distances, the person peels off and turns around, but you have to stay together. So until the halfway points for each distance, if that makes sense. So I was supposed to do the 50K, and it was 65 degrees and humid, which, you know, those are great temps, right? It's not, it's not a bad thing, but I've got 9 miles into it and I was having some problems. So I ended up swapping with the girl running the 20 mile, and she did the 50K, and I ended up switching to the 20 mile. But things that were happening that weren't something that would normally happen. I should have been able to run 20 miles like it was nothing, right? Because I trained for 50 miles and 3 or 4 weeks prior to that, I could do that. It wasn't a problem. But in this particular occasion, all I wanted to do is sit down on the ground and sleep. It was the hardest thing to not just sit down and just take a nap. And there's no reason that I should have felt that way. So, I did finish the 20 miles. I had a hard time with the heat. I had a hard time with the humidity. I just wanted to lay down. I was having a lot of, depression. So thankfully I was working with a coach, and she's like, this isn't you. You need to go to the doctor and you need to get some blood tests done. So that was the end of June of 2017. So they ran some blood tests, and found out that I do have an autoimmune disease, Hashimoto's as it's called. So autoimmune thyroid, my body is trying to kill my thyroid. That's what it's trying to do.
Okay.
so if you know your thyroid, it pretty much controls your body. It's
right.
It's metabolism. It's heat. There's so many things that it, weight, all of it that it definitely has a part of. And, so I had 50 miler coming up, and I had to, with the help of a coach, figure out how to train to run 50 miles in September, when my body was pretty much telling me you can't go 5 or 6 miles anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, that was, quite the shock to hear that. And it was something that took a while to process. Like you had to grieve because, you know, it's like, okay, there's something wrong with my body. That's never, ever going to be any different. You know, I'm just going to have this thing that's impacting something I really enjoy. So it was a hard pill to swallow for sure. So,
especially since you'd been doing, I mean, since you were doing it before, I mean, it was like, and so you knew what that felt like to be able to run without that. And so,
yeah.
So did you make it? I mean, the 50 mile for that, I mean, that initial, you know, grieving process and then, you know, the hawk in 2017, did you get that 50 miles?
So, you know, I know in your description, you talked about the doctor, right? And, so I went to see an endocrinologist and she said to me, she's like, this is what you have. You're going to be on these medications. You're never going to feel normal again. And you're probably not going to be able to do the long runs that you do now. You're not going to be able to do that. You're going to have to change that and cut that back. And if you know anything about me, you don't tell me I can't do something because I'm going to prove you wrong.
Yeah.
So that was the beginning of August. So just about a month later, I did the Hawk 50 mile in 15 hours. And I think it was 24 minutes. I finished it.
Wow. That's a pretty respectable time.
For that course.
Yeah, for that course.
And all the rocks that exist on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my first 50 mile. It was the Hawk. So
now was that, Dan, I know ran that one as well. Was that his first 50?
Yeah. Yeah. We did it the same race.
Okay.
We both registered for it at the same time, knowing, you know, to get our kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, to get back at the ice age, to kind of redeem ourselves.
Redeem yourself from that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cause it was Dan's pictures from that race. Dan and I went to the same church. And so we had my wife and I think he was still part of that church. My wife and I had left, but, still, you know, we were acquainted with him, but we weren't like close friends. It was just, I mean, we'd known each other and we hadn't talked for several years, but he was still on my Facebook and these pictures popped up on the Facebook of Dan and Christina and him, all of the stuff that he was going through with that race. And I said, you know, I looked at that and went, that looks like fun. And the next thing I said was, I bet I could do that. And so that was my start, was September of 2017 is when I started running trails from,
from those pictures?
From the pictures that Dan had. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And, yeah.
So that's, that's kind of cool. So,
yep.
I know when I then had met you shortly after that, you were still, you went through a period of really trying to get your medications adjusted.
That was definitely a challenge. So
was it the same doctor or did you have to go find somebody who would actually let you run?
So it was the same, was that 2017? Yeah. I have to think about the time frames.
Actually, it's probably 2018. Spring of 2018 was when I really started. I mean,
so it's 2018 then, right? Mm-hmm. I have to think about this. Yeah. So, it took a while because I have to figure out the time frames here. So after we did that, I was on the medications and I had to switch them out. I was on one that wasn't working properly and I could tell when my medication wasn't properly balanced with me because, you know, even new on it, if I would go through, how do I say this? When my medication wasn't right, I would hit some lows where I'd wake up in the morning or I'd be in the middle of something. And I'm like, you know what? It would just be okay if I didn't wake up again. Like I'm okay with today being the last day that I'm alive. Mm-hmm. And that's, if anyone knows me, that's not how I like to live life. Right. So when that would happen, that was October that happened. And I remember I called the doctor and I'm like, something's not right. And they're like, they kind of dismissed me and I'm like, no, something's not right. I need to have a blood test. This is where I'm at with it. So they sent me in to get the blood test run after, you know, saying, well, no, you're probably okay. You're just, you know, tried to like brush it under. And I'm like, you're the doctor. I'm calling you with these problems. Like, hello, I'm telling you that I don't care if I'm alive. So they ended up doing the blood test, and lo and behold, they were off. And so they had to switch me to a different medication, an actual brand medication, to see if that one would help. So, you know, all this time you're trying to run and trying to keep your distances. And that's what I was trying to manage, all of that, knowing, you know, that there was so much I had to learn about the disease in general. So, from that standpoint, yeah, I think I'm trying to figure out the timelines, because I ended up getting a new doctor shortly after that when we moved back to Michigan.
Oh, right.
So from that, you know, she put me on the medication. The one she put me on, I had a separate problem with that kind of gave me like a narcolepsy problem. So we were driving back to Michigan, and I ended up falling asleep while driving, and thankfully hit the rumble strips, which woke me up after taking it. So I shared that information with the new doctor. Once we moved back to Michigan, she switched me to a different medication that I'm still on. And then subsequently she also added a secondary medication that kind of helped level everything out so that I can run now. I don't do well in the heat sometimes, but she switched it out, and it was, I've been, ever since she did that, gosh, is that a year or two ago now? My levels have been good. So it's kind of nice to know but I've also had to change like my diet, and I have to train differently. So people will ask me, well, what do you do to be able to run these 50 and 100 mile, you know, races? And they're like, what do you run for mileage? And then I don't run the typical, I don't go out and run 20, 25 miles or whatever, and 10 or 15 miles the next day, because I can't. So that breaks down my body too much, and I can't recover from it. Mm-hmm. So I've definitely adapted and made up some really good training plans and successfully completed, you know, another second 50 mile race with a better time. I think it was just 15 minutes or 15 hours. I cut off 25 minutes off my time.
So what was that? What race was that one? Was that
Hawk 50?
Okay. So
the
you did
one I've done. Mm-hmm.
So you did the 50 then in 2018?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And then 2019, January, I did Bandera 100K.
Okay.
So, and then I attempted the Pistol 100 of March of 2019. I made it to 90 miles on that one. So that one's all pavement. So it's a very painful.
Yeah. You ran 90 miles on pavement. And if, I remember you telling me the story about that, the medical people pulled you.
Yeah, I spent 2.5 hours. I think it was two and a half hours. Well, I lost an hour to blisters underneath the balls of my feet. So I had to have my feet taped. So that was about 45 minutes waiting in the medic tent for that. Then I lost another 2 hours because of, you know, what I have, the not being able to regulate my body temperature well on each end. So especially the more tired I get, my body doesn't do well managing and balancing its heat, which is what I learned from that race as a takeaway, right? That you learn from every race and every failure you have, and what you take away from it is your win. And that's one of the things I learned. So I spent 2 hours in the, in a heat tent in there trying to stop the near hypothermia I had, because I was so cold, I couldn't stop shivering. Told me they wouldn't let me back out.
What was the temperature of the, race? At that
33, 34 degrees.
Okay.
It was just, I couldn't warm up anymore. So that was something I learned, is like, okay, if it's cold and the longer, cause at that point it was 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. So how, you know, you've been running for 20 hours or out there moving for 20 hours.
Yeah.
And, so at that point, that was one of the things that Matt, you know, that was one of the, what do we call it? The breakdown we had after, while we were sitting in the car, that broke down on the way back home. Cause that's fun. We're sitting in the car doing what went wrong? What can you do better? What did you learn from this? And we wrote it all down so that I wouldn't forget, you know, once you have that first sleep after you run like that, you forget everything bad that happened.
Yeah. That's why we sign up for more races.
Never the same day. It's always about 2 days later when you forget how awful it really was.
Yeah. You sleep and it all goes away.
Yep. You forget. So from that one is what I learned. And then coming for Pumpkin, you know, because we ran Pumpkin that same October of the same year, and you were there too. So last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and you had talked about the cold. I think people who don't have an autoimmune, you know, the same thing that you have, you, after running that far, your body doesn't heat up. Because I remember you were talking about pumpkin. It got to be in the night. It was in October, and I was thinking, it's not going to be that cold. And it was, I can't remember, it was high 40s, low 50s or something like that in the middle of the night. And my crew told me, says, you better take along, you know, because I was just going with my normal short sleeves, just one layer and arm sleeves. And they said, you know, you better take along something extra just in case you can't regulate your body temperature, you mm-hmm. know, like you do when you're, you know, when you're starting out. And that was a good advice because yep. in the middle of the night, it's like, oh man, I'm getting cold and I wasn't able to move fast enough to regulate
stay warm.
To stay mm-hmm. warm.
Yep. Yeah. The other takeaway I learned from Pistol was pretty much don't sit down. Cause I don't eat gluten because that's mm-hmm. one of the things that I absolutely read about with my particular disorder is that sometimes gluten can aggravate your immune system and cause it to kind of go after your thyroid a little more. So I don't eat gluten. So any kind of these races I do, I bring all of my own food. So what I learned from Pistol was I carry enough food for about 10 miles. So, mm-hmm. or, you know, 13, depending on when a crew can access me so that I have what I need for food for that, you know, section of it. Unfortunately at Pumpkin, which set me back in the first 30 miles, was, and it was feedback that I gave to the race too, is that when you allow the early start, like we did, because we started at 6, didn't we?
We started at 6. The normal start was at 8, but they gave us, you know, we could start early and get an extra 2 hours to mm-hmm. to finish. Yeah.
To finish. So they didn't run our drop bags out to that first crew station before right. we got there. Mm-hmm. So when I got there, I didn't have any of my food items. So my crew really couldn't, you know, what I had planned for calories, because I plan it out. My plan's crazy. It's like I have this many bags of this, and each one of these, there's this many calories, and I need to have X number of calories with me for the whole time. And so they weren't there at that, I think it was 11 miles, to get the food I had planned for and the salts right in mm-hmm. there for mm-hmm. my pack. So, cause it was on that, you know, on that next stretch where I didn't have my food, where I caught you and you had the salt caps that saved me
yeah.
so, from the yeah. cramping, because I didn't have the calories. I didn't have the salts I needed, didn't have any of it. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I happened to be carrying salt tabs that time. And that was actually the first time I'd ever carried salt tabs, yeah. with in a race. And so, so yeah, yep, I remember you told me that story you decided to have the drop bags at have it go out in a drop bag rather than have your crew carry the food.
Yeah, just because I thought it would be easier for them, because then they could just grab the drop bags while I come in, and in case they didn't make it there for some reason, I right. had what I needed. Right? That so was they, to, for the very it, problem that yeah. happened.
They made it, but the drop bags didn't.
Correct. I was like, okay, this is reversed, but okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, they tried. I had like emergency items with them that I thought would, you know, if they had to, they could throw something together, but it wasn't what I planned for that particular time of the day. Cause mm-hmm. you know, the later it gets, sometimes you want more savory foods versus sweet. And that was kind of what was in there. And it just, yeah, it wasn't, I think from mile 11 to what was it? 20. Was that big gap? Was it 20 miles? We saw them again.
Yeah. We had, I think we had 20 miles.
Was 20 it? Miles.
Yeah. We had 20 miles. Cause the first, we had an additional 10 in that first loop mm-hmm. to make the full 100.
Right. So I went 20 miles and I only had about 500 calories.
Okay. Yeah.
So when you think about that's what, 4 or 5 hours and, mm-hmm. and I didn't, you know, I had 500 calories maybe, and no salt.
Right. Right.
So in the heat, because it was warm.
It was starting to warm up. Yeah. By the time we were there, it started getting warm. So
well, yeah. And that next section was pretty great, because that's when I saw the crew and I saw them, they're wearing the shirts I made them. I have pictures of it, and I finally got to eat, and I head out of that aid station, and that's the one where the pavement is. And there was this lady doing her first 50K, and I'm singing 99 bottles of beer on the wall, because what else do you have to do when you're by mm-hmm. yourself? Right.
Yeah.
I sing to myself, you know, whatever. And she, you know, I talked to her and kind of helped her along, because like, that's, you know, you go back to that whole community aspect of it. That's the one thing that I really enjoy, is encouraging other people to go out and do things. That's why you said, did I slow you down? I'm not going to tell you if you slowed me down, because yeah. that's not the point of it. Right. I want you right. to come back and think that, you know, enjoy yourself. So I'm not going to tell you whether that was the case or not. So
yeah. And that's always the case. I mean, I've run with people that are slower than me, and I was like, yeah, don't worry about it. You know, I don't need to go fast. I mean, I'll just stick with you just because, you know, mm-hmm. let's spend the time on the trail together.
Yeah.
And when I'm by myself, I'll run my own pace. But if I'm with, you know, if I'm with someone else who's not as fast as I normally run, I mean, I run with them, and I mean, just that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And that's part of the community. Yeah. Caitlin says, yeah, she loves the trail running community. Amazing people.
Yeah.
When after I gave you the salt tabs, I went on ahead of you a little bit, but the Pumpkin Holler 100, they offered a bonus mile, mm-hmm. and you decided you weren't going to do the bonus mile, and I did.
No way. Because it was hilly. I looked that up. It was uphill.
I think 300 feet of elevation in a half a mile.
Yep.
So it was a pretty steep hill. But my wife Brenda said, don't do that. You just, you know, you're doing 100 miles. Why do you want to do 101? And I said, it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so,
right.
She still thinks that that's what caused my injury later in the race. But I was like, no, I don't think that was the case.
What's interesting is you were wearing the same shoes that I was wearing, that Amanda was wearing. I think we all had the same pair of shoes
on.
Have a scar, like a knot in that spot on the same place you had an issue.
On the left foot?
Mine's on the right foot.
On the right foot.
In the same spot, you know, right mm-hmm. above the tongue. That's where mine mm-hmm. is. So I think there was something with the way that particular shoe rubs on that tendon in your foot or something. So.
I had laced mine open. I mean, I had straight laced through the mid part of my foot mm-hmm. because just the regular lacing pushed too hard on it. But I think for me, my foot swelled and I didn't loosen it enough to do that. But I took the bonus mile, so I didn't see you then again until the middle of the night.
Because we leaped, you and I and Amanda leapfrogged for a while.
Yeah.
And so we lost you up by the cemetery on the backside, just headed into the last. Yeah. That's where I passed you that last time, and I didn't see you again.
We would hit the aid stations. We would kind of cross at the aid stations. And I remember being behind you and kind of hearing you ahead, probably a quarter mile or so. I could see your light. And then the thing with my foot hit, and it was like, I couldn't move when that pain hit. So did you have the same kind of pain in your foot from the shoes? I mean, was it still?
I changed out my shoes because I've learned to carry different brands and different mm-hmm. types of shoes. Now I think it's kind of crazy, but when I go to, like when I was going to Pistol, I think I had three different brands and four or five different pairs of shoes. So I had mm-hmm. Ultras, I had Hokas, I had Saucony. So I had different ones to switch into just to see which one
depending on how the race went.
Sometimes, like you said, your feet will swell. So mm-hmm. if you're using the same shoe, you know, the same pressure points, right? So if you change them out, you have a little bit of a different pressure point each time, and it's enough relief to allow you to feel like you're in heaven again, right? You're like, oh, a new pair of shoes. I remember putting on the Hokas when I switched into the Hokas and thinking, this is amazing because my feet don't hurt anymore for the, mm-hmm. you know, the 10 miles I was going to wear those.
It was
amazing because everything hurts, and it was like a fresh burst of energy, you know?
Having multiple pairs of shoes like that help keep you from blisters?
You know, I had problems with the blisters. Oh, sorry. Someone rang the doorbell.
That's okay.
That's Sid. So,
but
it's like they're delivering some medication for my dogs. So, from that standpoint, yeah, I think it does help with some of the blisters that you have, but I generally don't have a lot of issues with them because blisters a lot of times aren't just from pressure. They're from dehydration. So if you're dehydrated, you're going to end up with more blisters.
Really?
So you got to keep track of that.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. So I try to make sure I drink enough, because when I don't, that's when I tend to have more blisters. I did the Bandera 100K, mm-hmm. you know, and that's all trail. And I had one tiny blister on the back of my heel. It's not even worth of a blister. It's smaller than like an eraser, pencil eraser.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. Huh. But
I had, you know, that's, I had never heard that. It's a, cause I feel like I hydrated. I mean, I felt like I had drank enough, but I've, you know, in the long runs I've had, I've always developed some sort of blister. Mm-hmm. And you said you had one time you had a blister on the bottom of your foot, the ball of your foot on the bottom.
Yeah, that was pistol. So I do think in that case, I didn't drink enough. And then on top of that, I didn't switch out my shoes okay. as often as I should
what
have.
What brand were you wearing?
Oh, what one was I wearing for that one? That was Saucony. So okay. those were Saucony, and I think I had some Brooks that I was wearing for those, but I didn't switch them out enough. But when that was my first attempt past 63 miles, and mm-hmm. and it was all pavement. So when, you know, as you know, with 100 miler, you do a lot of power hiking and walking, mm-hmm. and that changes the pressure points on your feet. So again, another takeaway from that race was you need to practice power hiking. Mm-hmm. So, and you need to practice it a lot.
Yeah.
So going into Pumpkin, I had done that, you know, and it's funny because I know Caitlin, she's still watching. I would pull tires in Michigan with my friend Adelise, and people would be like, why do you pull tires? Well, one, for strength, because there's no hills, so it mimics mm-hmm. hills, but mm-hmm. it also changes that pressure point in your foot, so that I was, you know, able to build up some, I think, what, maybe calluses or the appropriate muscles to help with that kind of push off. So mm-hmm.
yeah. Talk a little bit about, I mean, you've done a lot more tire pulling than I have, but I mean, I don't know where, when were you introduced to tire pulling? Talk a little bit more about using that for training.
Oh, so I was introduced to it here in Kansas City by Mark Goodrich. I don't know if you know him or not.
Yes, I know. Well, because mm-hmm. I was wondering if, I mean, there was a time I remember that Mark Goodrich invited the trail nerds, you know, it came up on Facebook saying, hey, come pull tires with us. And mm-hmm. I'd never heard of it before. And that was my first time, was when we went out there. Was that the first time you were there too, or?
I had done it with him with the Monday group, was doing it with him. So I had done it prior to that. Yeah. With him. So then I did a couple of times. I tried his. And then when I knew I was moving to Michigan, and I knew that the hills were going to leave, we weren't going to have any more hills because it's not very hilly where we lived in Michigan. Mm-hmm. I bought the harness from Trail Toes and got a tire and started pulling the tires. So
right
from there. So we would call it Tire Tuesday. So I would pull mm-hmm. them pretty much Tuesday mornings. We'd find there's an overpass in Bay City that we would pull it up and down, you know, because it's a small hill, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe we'd pull it up and run back down. So
uh-huh. yeah.
that's what we had. So, but yeah. Yep.
So how many, when you train with tires, how many miles did you go? And how does it help?
So like 3 to 5 miles probably was most of what I've done. I still do it here on occasion too. I think if you see my Strava, you see that I mm-hmm. do
I've
that
seen,
on occasion.
I've seen
here.
It.
Yeah. So it helps with your running form because it makes you use your core muscles to kind of stay upright. So it's she still thinks there's somebody here. Sorry. And, okay. and I can't stop her because she's all riled up now because somebody was here. Mm-hmm. So it helps with your posture from the standpoint of, if you wear the waist belt, that helps you kind of keep your hips forward while you're doing the hills and pulling that. So it helps with that and keeping yourself in the right position. And then just, I mean, it takes a lot of work to pull a tire, especially on like concrete mm-hmm. here. There's a lot. It's tough. So, but yeah, so it's just strength from pulling it. If you think it's a 20-pound tire behind you on top of laying it flat and pulling it across concrete, it's, you know, it's a certain amount of resistance associated with that. So, and you can't lean forward because it doesn't help. So you have to pull it with the right posture. So
yeah. So Caitlin says it's still Tire Tuesday.
Yeah, she painted Adelise and is the one who I would pull it with. And I know Caitlin's pulling it with Adelise now. And Adelise has what? Sunflower. And I think Caitlin says tacos on it they painted them so that they're decorated. So I'm kind of jealous. I need to paint my tire to match now. So I think I'm going to do a Pac-Man.
Oh, that would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've rigged up, I'm a DIY kind of guy. So I rigged up a shoulder harness to pull. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a tire that I've done a little bit. I have not done nearly as much as you have, but, I found it helped my form. Yep. Adelie still has a donut one as well.
So a donut one. Yeah. I saw the donut one. She did too. Cute.
but yeah, I found that, you know, it helped me learn how to lean forward from my ankles to keep my posture mm-hmm. straight and to get that nice lean.
And not from your hips, right? You're leaning from your ankles
and then let your hips kind of do the work to move to pull yourself forward.
Right.
So yeah, I found it to be very helpful. And it's one of those things that I've kind of haven't done this year yet, but it's something I want to do. And just to, because it does help. It does help.
It does. Definitely does. So highly recommend.
Now, if I remember right, you went back and did pistol again after
I was supposed to this year, but
they canceled. Pandemic. Okay. Okay. Yes. Okay.
So
I remember
I'm doing it next year.
Okay.
So already registered.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Cause I know you and I talked after Pumpkin Holler, and you kind of said that was something that you might do. And so that was the last that I had known, is it?
Yep. I was supposed to do it in March. So, but then, you know, pandemic. And so they offered us the opportunity to either do it in October or roll it to next year. So I'm going to do it next year. So, mm-hmm. yeah. But
yeah. Yep. Is that a March race, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Perfect temperatures for running. So they said October, and I went, October in Tennessee is kind of warm. I don't think I want to do that for 100 miles.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, October in Kansas is kind of warm too. So
yeah, that's fair. That's a fair statement. Yeah. So it's been quite toasty here.
Yeah. So you got pistol coming up. So what else do you have? Are you training for anything else that in the,
oh, you know,
trying to keep your hand in.
I'm Todd's August challenger. So that right now is my focus.
Okay. So, maybe you should explain what Todd's August challenge, what Todd's challenge is.
Todd is, what did he call that? His
Outrun Todd month.
His Outrun Todd month. Yeah. Outrun so Todd every month. Yeah. So last year he was making comments to people about, you know, who he ran more miles than, and this was in July when I was training for Pumpkin, you know, so, and I never beat Todd. I was surprised. Well,
he runs crazy amounts of miles. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just looking at it. I'm like, Todd, I beat you for miles, just some, you know, smart comment to him. And he's like, so then he, challenged me to August and pulled, you know, not knowing he, made fun of me back because he beat me in August last year. So this year we are outrun Todd.
So you're on again for August?
I'm on for August. He said some significant miles. So I've got a plan.
You should switch that over to like January or something like that, because August is still hot.
It's still hot. But I'm hoping that I'm acclimated to this crazy heat by then so that I can be running a little or moving a little faster than moving I have faster, been yeah. lately. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah.
I've got that. And then I'm doing the 1908 challenge up at Leavenworth in September.
Okay.
I do have a free entry into Pumpkin Holler if I decide I want to do that one again, but I mm-hmm. haven't decided on that yet.
Okay.
And then there's the KUS in November. I'm kind of thinking it was like a 24-hour race, so maybe okay. Which is all. We'll see.
KU what?
KUS.
KUS. I'm not familiar with that.
You have to look it up. It's in Wichita. It starts on a Friday, I think, at like 6 o'clock at night, and you can go for distances, but you run for 24 hours essentially. So,
okay. Okay. Looped course.
Yeah. Looped course. It's like just a 2 mile looped course. It's not very long.
So. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I have to look at that.
Yeah.
Now the 1908 race is 19 hours is right. 19 hours and 8 minutes.
Yeah. We're doing it as a team. There's four of us. So,
okay. Now that one was originally scheduled for April, if I remember right.
Correct. Yeah. So myself and my husband are replacing two people that they lost because it didn't work from the time frame to where they rescheduled it. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm a, what am I? Pinch runner. That's my husband. So Matt's doing it too. So there's that.
So but. did Matt get into running because of you?
Oh, he doesn't run. He walks. He's going to walk okay. it. Okay. Okay. He plays volleyball and pickleball. So, yeah.
Well, that's the nice thing about ultramarathons. There's a lot of walking involved.
Mm-hmm. And he's fast. He can walk a mile in like 14 and a half minutes. So I'm like, you're fine. So
that's good.
Yeah.
There's a podcast that I found it recently and I don't even know how I stumbled onto it. It's called The History of Ultra Running. Mm-hmm. And, this guy did a series of shows on the history of the 100 miler, and it originally started out. It was like in the 1800s. No, even I think 1700s. Even there were basically the same kind of scenario that we have as runners. They, you know, be in a bar and someone say, "I can walk 100 miles in under 24 hours," mm-hmm. and that was actually the original challenges. And they were walking. They had to be land on their heel, push off with their toe, and mm-hmm. they couldn't run. And they were doing it. The whole thing. And so it even lasted into the 1800s that it was a big thing to walk 100 miles in under 24 hours. How fast could you do it?
Yeah, to walk it under 24 hours is an amazing feat, I think. So
yeah,
but
yeah, I thought that they walk a lot faster than
yeah. I do. Yeah, yeah. Although I joke with Matt, I'm like, you know, if I could walk at your pace for 100 miles, I could do it in under 24 hours. And he's like, yeah, but I'm like, there's this whole food and bathroom and clothes change and stuff. Yeah. That. So, but
yeah, that's the thing is it's the total time. It's not the time that you, not the time that you run.
Yeah. It's been interesting with the whole autoimmune side of it and the ultra stuff, because I've run across people that I don't know, that I've met from Facebook, who also run and have run into the same situation from the standpoint of, having thyroid problems, women. So I've gotten to know, several people who have the same problem. So, and talk to them and talk through the training struggles and such with trying to do ultras. So it's, the trail community is so good about like supporting each other. And then on top of that, like you said, talking each other into bad ideas, right? It's like, oh, yeah, we should go do this. So my friend Jen and I do it all the time. It's like, hey, we should do this. And I'm like, oh, that's a bad idea. So yeah, when are we doing it? But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Well, I'm going to wrap up. I try to leave this to about an hour. Anything more you want to mention or anything that you can?
I mean, I could leave with some tips. I mean, for anyone,
that would be good. It's, you know, since you said there are people who are kind of in your situation.
I think that, you know, running ultras definitely puts a huge strain on your body, right? It's a toll physically. It's a toll mentally. The race itself, but all the training that goes into it. And what I think sometimes we fail to realize is that until in some cases like mine, I don't know necessarily what triggered it, but it's suspiciously around the time when I started really running a lot more miles. So what I would recommend to people is just, you know, if you want to do something like this, make sure you train smart, you know, and you get the sleep and you eat well and you eat enough calories and you are training properly and you pay attention to what your body is saying. If you go out and you're just exhausted and then sleep, you know, that mm-hmm. rest is way more important than that 5 mile run you're trying to get in for X number of miles, you know, because that could be the difference between putting yourself into, you know, an adrenal fatigue situation, which runs into, you know, freaking your body out enough that you have maybe an autoimmune disease kind of pull out of that. So, mm-hmm. so it's really critical for people to understand that doing ultras sounds amazing. And yes, can anybody do it? If you can put in the work and you can figure out how to push through things when it hurts and you try to keep going and you train appropriately for it, you can do it. But you have to learn to listen to your body too, because if you don't, you could do some damage to it where you're not able to do the things you want to do. Like I've seen stress fractures, you know, you could have an injury that's going to take you a long time to come back. You could have adrenal fatigue where you're out for a year or more trying to get your body to settle back down again. So it's really critical to pay attention and to what's going on when you're doing those kinds of training.
And last week I talked to Heather Hart, and she went through, it wasn't an autoimmune disease, but she went through burnout, and it was, you know, it was the same kind of thing you were talking about. We tend to get this, this mindset, oh yeah, I'm tough. You know, we're doing an extreme sport where it's, you know, running 100 miles is an extreme activity. Mm-hmm. And we get into the idea of once you've done it is like, then how far can I go? I can do another.
Right.
And so there are people who seem to be able to do 100 miler every month. You know, I've read of people who are doing that, and, you know, just with a few weeks recovery and go out and do another one. But you know, they may be a lot younger and they may not be able to do that for, you know, I don't know that it's one of those things. What are the limits? And each of us has our own. I mean, you know, that's really, I think, well, what you said is very important, is each of us has to listen to our body, and, you know, we're all going to be different.
Yep.
So, well, thank you. If somebody sees this and wants to get in touch with you, is there a way that they can message you or find you on Facebook
I mean, it's probably easier if they reach out to you, because I kind of keep my Facebook very private. You have to be friends of mine too.
Yeah.
But absolutely, you know, if they reach out to you and you can pass them on to me, that would be.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. So, anybody who's seeing this and has questions, then I can kind of go in between. You know? So I always ask that, because sometimes there are, you know, are people who are active and they're doing something on social media that are fairly public, and some of us are more private. I know some people are like, nope, enough of Facebook. Yep.
If they're not friends of friends, you can't find me. So yep. I hide in the obscurity. So, but yeah.
Yeah. And my wife and I are both very public. And so you know, we're easily found, and you can find out a lot about who I am. So,
but yeah.
So if you're seeing this on a replay and have questions, or something that we didn't cover or something specific, reach out to me, send me a message, and I'd be glad to try to get an answer for you. Well, thanks again, Misty. I've appreciated the time that you spent. Caitlin says she's planning to message you right after this.
Yeah, I'm sure. I've helped her with some of her running too. No, thank you for asking me. I've enjoyed this.
I've appreciated it. So I'll sign off here. I'm gonna switch over to single screen, I think, and I'll talk to you later. Thanks again, Misty, for that.
All right. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you for being part of this. If you've watched this all the way through and listened to our conversation, I appreciate you being here. For Caitlin being here live, I always appreciate people who comment as we go along. So if I can help you with your running and any kind of mindset training, I would be glad to talk with you to see how I can help you improve your running, get your mind and body in sync for peak performance. Message me. I'll be glad to reach out to you and see how I can help. Thanks for watching. I'll see you next time.